I can be quite sure that you are expecting me to talk about Pakistan today, but I'm not doing that. And not because I think you might have overdosed on it. You can never OD on Pakistani politics in India because, as I've said jokingly, of course, that Pakistan politics is our internal affair. The reason I'm not talking about it today is that anything I say today will be outdated because the vote of confidence or vote of no confidence will take place sometime Saturday afternoon. So the picture will change then. I will, however, mention one very interesting facet of Pakistan politics and the debate towards the end of this episode of Cut the Clutter. Today, however, we are talking mostly about domestic politics. More than domestic politics, also domestic political governance, because some very interesting facts have come up. One of my young colleagues, most of my colleagues are very young. In fact, I primarily help with my presence here to bring up the average age of the newsroom by myself. So we are taken more seriously. The print has a very young newsroom. So Unnati Sharma has done a wonderful story, a fine story, on how so many chief ministers in India keep so many portfolios. Now you might say, oh, everybody is power hungry. But at the same time, some chief ministers keep very few portfolios and there are some that keep no portfolios. So this is one of the peculiarities, one of these fascinating aspects of Indian political governance that I haven't seen adequately discussed or understood. And as to why this happens, we can only make educated guesswork or educated analysis. So first of all, look at the list of five chief ministers in India who have the most portfolios. So first of all, no surprise you might think, because elections taken place just now, he's also leading the largest state in the country by far, that is Yogi Adityanath. 34 portfolios, 34. And remember, in our constitutional system, in a large state, the number of people sworn in a cabinet, in the council of ministers, can be 15% of the house. So UP can have about 60, 61 people. And at this point, UP has about 52 plus chief minister. So he has some space left, he can get more ministers, yet he has 52 ministers, but still he has 34 portfolios. Number two is shared, honors are shared. And again, from completely different parties, not from the BJP, not from the Congress, but two different parties, Pinarayi Vijayan in Kerala from the CPM, the left front, and Bhagwant Mann in Punjab. These two gentlemen have 27 portfolios each. Now, both of these are not large states. They are not large states, but still they can have a sizable cabinet. Yet they have all these portfolios with themselves. Then again, now you come to a small state, Uttarakhand. In a small state, only 10% of the assembly is allowed to be ministers. For example, Delhi has 70 MLAs. So only seven, a council of seven ministers is possible in Delhi. Now, Dhami in Uttarakhand, a small state, has 23 portfolios. Now you might say that, oh, chief ministers who have large majorities, brute majorities, are from one party and who rule over everything, they tend to be dictatorial and they tend to have everything in their control and they have too many portfolios. And maybe this will not be the case in a coalition. But again, there is no straight line there. Look at Jharkhand. In Jharkhand, where the ruling party is in coalition with the Congress and others, Hemant Soren has 19 portfolios, 1-9. On the other hand, check out also the five chief ministers with the least number of portfolios. That list is topped by Arvind Kejriwal, how many? 0. KCR, how many? 0. K. Chandrasekhar Rao in Telangana. Pema Khandu in Arunachal Pradesh, 0. Now there's a little bit of a gochi there in the sense that, a little bit of a twist there in the sense that these chief ministers in some cases say that all portfolios not allocated to others. For example, that may apply to Pema Khandu, but that doesn't apply particularly to Kejriwal or KCR. So these three chief ministers have no portfolios. So do they feel that much more confident, that much more in control? I would tend to believe yes, because K. Kejriwal government is the Kejriwal government. So he doesn't need to run any portfolios himself. His portfolios are allocated to his trusted colleagues in his small cabinet. He, on the other hand, keeps himself free for policy decisions and also for politics, for building his party all over the country. Because he doesn't feel insecure about anybody in his party or in the government. Nor does KCR for that matter. Pema Khandu probably is the same situation, but I don't know that politics very well. So I would not generalize, except to say that Arvind Kejriwal, K. Chandrasekhar Rao, KCR and Pema Khandu have zero portfolio each. Then we have Naveen Patnaik in Odisha with two portfolios and Nifio Ryu in Nagaland also with two portfolios. So three with zero each and two with two each. Then if I just add one more at number six, that is Himanta Biswa Sarma in Assam. Again, only three portfolios. Again, somebody who's fully in control of his government. His party knows that they won that election essentially because of him and is fully trusted by his high command. Also, he carries enough clout in his high command not to mess with him. And what that means, I will explain to you as we go into the analytical aspects of this data. Also, I'll be making many references to chief ministers and their portfolios. So what we are doing is, for ease of referencing and also for your background information, I'm sharing with you a chart of all the chief ministers in India and their portfolios, the numbers of portfolios held by them, and also detailed portfolios. And this is in the ranking of the number of portfolios held, which may be a good thing, which may be a bad thing. That's a decision we just leave to you, but we put them in a numerical ranking. Plus, you will see these graphics also explaining to you, showing you, demonstrating to you the top five portfolio owners, the top five landlords, and then sort of top five or the bottom five who don't particularly bother about keeping any portfolios with them because they probably are much too confident of their power. Now, interesting facets arise here. For example, if so many chief ministers have so many portfolios, are there some favorite portfolios that everybody wants to keep? So see, in about 30 chief ministers at any given point of time, 17 have the home department with themselves. Home is very important because home means the control over the police. And state governments in India have full control over law and order. So police is the currency of their power. So they want, chief ministers want control over the police. Now what happens is, in high command run parties, when they want to keep their chief minister off balance, and when the chief minister is a bit insecure, or if the chief minister is not so powerful in his own right, then they play games by forcing the chief minister to part with the home portfolio into giving it to somebody else. And that somebody else is usually a thorn in the chief minister's side. You see, in Haryana, for example, you have Manohar Lal Khattar as a chief minister, but he doesn't have home. Home has been given to Anil Vij, who's very voluble, very vocal, and a headline-hunting minister. So he's always a thorn in the chief minister's side. So in a way, you balance the power of the chief minister. Similarly, in Madhya Pradesh, where Shivraj Singh Chauhan had to be given chief ministership, probably although the party was not very keen to give it back to him, they forced him to give home ministry to Narottam Mishra, who, you know, makes a lot of news all the time, hits headlines, not very different from Anil Vij in Haryana, minus the beard, of course. Then you see in Chhattisgarh, Congress party has done something similar. Bhupesh Baghel is there, the chief minister, but the home department is not with him. That has been put away. So these are the ways that parties then also play these games. But where chief ministers can have their way, they keep the home ministry with themselves, home department with themselves. So home department is with 17 chief ministers. Then general administration department, that is the department that decides the postings, transfers, cadre allocation, or central deputation for IAS, IPS, Indian Forest Service officers. So chief ministers mostly like to control that because that is power. They can then decide which officer will go there. Similarly, personnel department. Personnel is appointments, postings, transfers within the state, of the officers within the state, not All India Services, but all the other officers also. That also chief ministers prefer to keep with themselves. So 18 chief ministers, if 17 have home department with themselves, 18 have general administration with themselves. Personal department is 14 chief ministers, 1-4. Then finance ministry is something that many chief ministers don't like to keep because one finance ministry is complex. Second, you have to allocate funds for various ministries. So you don't want to be seen as the bad guy because every state is short of money. So you better put that burden on somebody else. Also, to have finance portfolio means having to attend too many meetings in Delhi as well. So too many trips to Delhi. So very few chief ministers have finance ministry, but six chief ministers in the country, six, have both home and finance with them. Now, another innovation has come up, and that innovation is, quote unquote, I'm not making anything up, all important policies, which means that you might have so many ministers, but all important policies are still with you. Which are the chief ministers who have this? Again, it's completely ideologically and politically secular. It's all over. It's all across the parties. So Pinarayi Vijayan in Kerala from the left has the same portfolio, all important policies. Bhupendra Patel in Gujarat from BJP has it. Biplab Kumar Deb in Tripura has it. And you know, who leads this tally? It's not a chief minister, but a former chief minister and now the Prime Minister of India in his second term. So Prime Minister Modi also, included among the portfolios he keeps with himself, is also all important policies. So PM keeps with himself personal, also Department of Atomic Energy and Space. These are usually customarily kept with the Prime Minister and also any portfolios not allocated to any of the others. Now, some states have found a different formula to running the home department in the state. Gujarat, for example, has an innovation. The innovation is the chief minister keeps the home department with himself, but appoints a powerful, trusted MOS who then runs that department. So this innovation was noted when Mr. Modi was chief minister of Gujarat because he had a powerful minister of state for home. And if you want to know how important that position is, remember the name of Amit Shah because he was in that position. He's now the home minister of India. So at the moment, again, chief minister in Gujarat holds a home portfolio but has an MOS home who is Harsh Ramesh Sanghvi. So that is one more innovation. But once again, home department is something that chief ministers take the most seriously. Then you can also see interesting aspects. Most chief ministers tend to keep with themselves the portfolio that pertains to something that may be important in a sense that is peculiar to that state. So Bhagwant Mann, among his 27 portfolios, also has agriculture because Punjab is still primarily an agricultural state. I wish it had gone beyond that, but that is not the case. So he's kept agriculture among the 27 portfolios he has. Jharkhand, Hemant Soren, he's kept mines and minerals. Jharkhand is a mineral-rich state, so he's kept the mines and minerals with himself. Again, go to Kerala, Pinarayi Vijayan there. He has kept coastal shipping and internal navigation with himself. It's a coastal state. So you see these trends everywhere. Now, one chief minister we are not talking about too much right now is because right now he does not have a cabinet because he's got his cabinet to resign. He'll reconstitute the cabinet. That is Y.S. Jagan Mohan Reddy in Andhra. But the fact is he only had just one odd portfolio with himself, just a couple of portfolios with himself, very few. But importantly, you might notice that he doesn't have the home portfolio with him. So you will say, Shekhar Gupta, you are saying all these powerful chief ministers keep home portfolio with them. He doesn't have it. He's among the most powerful chief ministers, lord of all his surveys, huge, humongous majority which he won entirely on his own strength. So how come he doesn't have the home portfolio? So see it more carefully. Read the fine print. He has a home minister. Somebody has a home portfolio. So he has a Department of Law and Order, whatever that means. So Home Minister can keep his portfolio, while Law and Order, which also means the police, is under the CM's own control. Again, in terms of what's important in their states, particularly Himanta Biswa Sarma, who has very few portfolios, he has home and personal, which you would expect a chief minister to have, the first two. But he also has PWD, because Assam also has funds being given for a lot of construction and development there. Plus you have you have the flood issue and you have the bridge building, etc. there. So that's very important. Similarly, in Uttar Pradesh, you see other innovations. Uttar Pradesh, the most important, or the most, if I may say so, the most lucrative for the bad guys and the good guys. For the good guys to prevent corruption, for the bad guys to make money from it. And what it's used for, you make that call. So Yogi Adityanath has housing and urban affairs with him. That is the most important department in Uttar Pradesh right now, because urban affairs means Noida, Greater Noida and places like that. Also, he has a peculiar department that's called confidential information. Now, this is not something that I've seen anywhere else. What is confidential information? So as time goes on, I'll assign some reporter to go and look into this. What is the department? Who are the officers in charge of this? What is the portfolio of confidential information? But Yogi Adityanath has it. He also has the Department of Economics and Statistics. Statistics, as you know, is a very important thing right now. So once again, if you look at the full picture, you don't see many common threads arising from it. You can see people from a dominating party with a large majority having a lot of portfolios, namely Yogi Adityanath and Bhagwant Mann. You can also see a dominating party with a lot of seats having zero portfolios for its chief minister. Check out KCR, Arvind Kejriwal, Y.S. Jagan Mohan Reddy, Pema Khandu, etc. So there is no clear trend, but I think there is quite a bit of clarity that where the chief minister is very powerful, where the chief minister is very powerful and where the chief minister believes that I own my party, there they don't bother keeping too many portfolios with themselves. Where the chief ministers are insecure, they hang on to too many portfolios themselves. And where the high command thinks it can bully the chief minister, or it should cut the chief minister to his size, or that it can afford to cut the chief minister to his size, then they force the chief minister to part with key portfolios like home to somebody else, who will then continue to be a thorn in his side. That is to keep the balance in the state. So these are the common factors or the common features that emerge. But as I told you, I'm giving you data on all the chief ministers. As you see the fine detail, I'm sure you can come up with your own interpretations. I've been watching debates on Pakistani media about their politics, obviously, for the last few days. All of these are in Urdu. And I picked up some really interesting Urdu expressions. And I would mention three to you. One is Ayin Shikni. So in Urdu, you would say an iconoclast, somebody who breaks idols, is a Bhut Shikan. Bhut means an idol. Usko tod diya like this, shikan. So Ayin Shikni, that means you are destroying the constitution. Ayin is the constitution. So I've heard this for the first time in the Pakistani debate. The next one again is something that I find very apt. That is Ahmakon ki Jannat. Ahmakon ki Jannat is the exact translation of fool's paradise. But I must say that Ahmakon ki Jannat sounds a lot more fun than a fool's paradise. And the third one is the most complex and the most political. That is Nazariya-e Zarurat. Nazariya-e Zarurat means, it is the translation in Urdu for doctrine of necessity. And doctrine of necessity has been so central to Pakistan's politics that I thought that even though I'm not talking about Pakistan today, I will mention this to you, because if you see the coverage on Pakistan, if you hear television discussions anywhere, you will see that Pakistani Supreme Court has junked the doctrine of necessity. Until yesterday, eminent Pakistanis were writing letters to their Chief Justice saying, please don't follow the doctrine of necessity. So what is the doctrine of necessity, or Nazariya-e Zarurat? Doctrine of necessity is something that was first written about by Henry D. Bracton in medieval times. He was a jurist in medieval times, who defined doctrine of necessity as that which is not lawful, but is made lawful by necessity. So just to give you a very crude example, if you see a person with a machine gun about to massacre 100 people, and you have a pistol or you have a knife, you go and kill that person. So you have broken the law, right? The person wasn't attacking you, but you saw the person doing something much worse. So you will be justified in doing so because of the doctrine of necessity. That what you did at that point may not have been normally lawful, but it was made lawful by the necessity of the situation. This was further refined in the 20th century by another jurist called Hans Kelsen, who said that this is about extra legal actions by state actors which are developed to restore order. These should be found to be lawful or constitutional. Now, this is not something that modern jurisprudence uses often, that judges in democracies use often. If you look at references, you'll find one in Grenada, one someplace else, distant places like that. But Pakistan it is, where this doctrine has been used almost a dozen times, including 10 prominent occasions. And this is important in Pakistan because in 1954, Ghulam Mohammad was Pakistan's Governor General. He dismissed, using his powers, his non-existent powers as Governor General, he dismissed the Constituent Assembly, because Pakistan's Constituent Assembly took much longer than India's in coming up with a constitution. And the reason he dismissed that Constituent Assembly was simply because he did not like the constitution it was going to adopt. That was challenged in the Pakistani Supreme Court, and Pakistani Supreme Court said they found the same justification, that this is doctrine of necessity, that Pakistan did not have a proper legislature because it had a Constituent Assembly. So a law that is passed by the Constituent Assembly does not become a law unless the Governor General approves it. But Governor General didn't have the power to approve any such laws passed so far, or even the law empowering him to dismiss the National Assembly, because there was no National Assembly, there was a Constituent Assembly. The court then said the doctrine of necessity means ke jo hona tha wo ho gaya. Whatever had to happen has happened. This is necessary for Pakistan, so let him get away with it. That led to the arrival of the military in Pakistani power structure, because Field Marshal, then General Ayub Khan, was already in the Pakistani cabinet, and that led to his becoming the Chief Martial Law Administrator soon after that. And since then, RB has not gone out of power in Pakistan. Now, many occasions on which the same doctrine has been used to favor the army. For example, after the coup by Zia-ul-Haq, when Zulfiqar Ali Bhutto's government was dismissed and he was put in jail, Bhutto's wife, Nusrat Bhutto, she went to Pakistani Supreme Court, and they again used the doctrine of necessity. So because law and order was very bad in Pakistan, there was instability, Zulfiqar Ali Bhutto's government was not able to keep things in order, it was necessary for the army to move in and to impose martial law. It was only done for some time temporarily. And also that, after all, national interest is above everything else. There was necessity to take an unconstitutional step. So once again, the violation of the constitution principle was allowed and justified. And then that became a trend, and it's been used many times after that, including notably in 1999, when another general, or the next general after Zia-ul-Haq, also staged a coup and took over power, that is General Musharraf. So once again, the Pakistani Supreme Court held in favor of the general by invoking the same doctrine of necessity. So the concern this time with supporters of democracy in Pakistan was that again, Pakistani judges might not say, look, at this point, Imran Khan has dissolved the house. There is a lot of instability. He may lose the vote of confidence, but that will also happen because of defections and because too many other parties, diverse parties have come together. Even if a new government comes into being, a new coalition comes into power, after Imran Khan's defeat, it will be an unstable government. People will keep pushing it from outside and from within also. So that will be bad for Pakistan. Instability is not good. So maybe it is better to let the National Assembly remain dissolved and let there be early elections, because that is the more convenient and more necessary thing. The Pakistani Supreme Court in this case has completely rejected this logic. They have said no doctrine of necessity. We will go strictly by the word of law and the constitution. So they have rejected all the actions taken by Imran Khan and his loyalist deputy speaker. And that is why the National Assembly was ordered to be restored and a vote of no confidence to be held. So those who support democracy in Pakistan and those who have fought for democracy in Pakistan over the decades, they see as a big plus point, as a big shot in the arm. Oh.